This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. As we celebrate 61 years of Malaya's independence tomorrow, we look at our healthcare from the eyes of the veteran and the contemporary. We talk to two consultant endocrinologists, Dr. Anwar Zaini, the former Vice Chancellor of the University of Malaya, and Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini from University of Malaya Medical Center, about healthcare from one generation to the next. Welcome to the show. How are both of you today?
Right, I think you should simplify it by calling me AZ. That was what I have been known in the university.
Okay.
Because too much of a long introduction, yes. It's no point.
You know, tell us about yourself. I can't call you AZ. That is so disrespectful. Dr. Anwar, tell us about the experience of Merdeka. How old were you? Where were you? And what did it mean to you in 1957?
I was 10 then, you know. But I need to explain to you a bit the scenario and the environment where I was, which part of the planet I was then. Mm-hmm. You know, I was 10 years old, and then we were in the very ulus of Negeri Sembilan. I'm very proud of that because I was with nature, and I live with the nature. I talk to the trees and the plants and the birds and the bees.
Where is this? Ulu Bendol?
No, Ulu Bendol. This is Ulu Jempol.
Okay.
You have probably not heard about Ulu
Never
Jempol.
Heard of it. No.
So I was living with my grandfather. My grandfather was a very disciplinarian, very strong, fierce man, but with the kindness of a heart. And I know that he wanted the best thing to happen to his first grandson. So we at those time, I didn't remember that our family were politically aligned. I do not remember the shouts of Merdeka, you know, ringing in the kampongs. But we were just very interested on survival, work on the piece of land that we had. Every grain of rice is a hard work to get. And I think that's what we were. But I think I did remember the shouts through the radios of neighbors about Merdeka, Merdeka, Merdeka. But to us, it meant very little. And I still remember the days at home where the quality of health or standard of health was not that very good. There's a lot of infectious diseases, tropical diseases. There are a lot of malaria, tuberculosis. I think hindsight now, looking at what happened, there's a lot of diarrheal diseases. And infant mortality, perinatal, neonatal, infant mortality was very, very high. And maternal mortality was high as well. So I remember those days when everybody comes home to deliver their babies, you know. Mm. And I know within my own family, there were two of my, one younger sister of mine and one cousin sister of mine died at home in front of my eyes. They were not sent to hospital. They were all treated traditionally. They had high fever. They're wasting away, I mean, becoming thinner and thinner. And that was the scenario. And we had, I think most of the diseases were treated by traditional Bomo and all those things. And the only allopathic medicine that I can remember of was this person called Dresa. Dresa, the kampung called Dresa is a man with white jacket, white trousers, and with injections. And they were in the clinic in one of the center of the kampung. And then we all, children were sent there to be probably vaccinated. So those are the scenario that I came in. And I remember when I was in year three, when we did our rural survey, I led my own classmate to my own kampung to do a rural survey, to look at the status of health in the kampung.
When you say year three of pursuing medicine?
Medical school.
Okay.
And I began to know, and I was a bit ashamed, that how we were deprived of with regards to sanitation. There were no latrines, mind you. This at 1969, 70. There were no latrines then, no pit latrines even. Whereas some cities or some towns, they all had bucket latrines, mm-hmm. you know, at least that sort of things. But sanitation has been an issue. hence the tropical diseases, the communicable disease, and so on. We know we used the small stream that irrigates the paddy field. We had paddy field. The small stream were where we did our business. And then later on, after coming back from year three, year four, I saw the Jitra bowl was sent to the kampung to do pit latrines. Everybody, all the kampung houses were asked to do pit latrines.
Right. So what prompted this interest in medicine? I mean, if you only knew Dresser as the guy with the injection, I mean, how did allopathic medicine, interest you at all?
Well, I think you will be surprised that it's just plain intuitive and blind jealousy. I had my uncle passed away. He was educated in Penang when my grandfather was a police sergeant then in Penang. When he retired, he stayed over in Penang, Bukit Mentajam and Kepala Batas and so on. And he did well in school. And later on, when he came home after finishing his high school certificate, he wanted to do law. I had always this envious, view of my uncle. You had everything. I had my paddy field to work on. You know? Yeah. I got to a slot and paddy field. You had good school. See, if you want to be a lawyer, well, I want to be a doctor. Without knowing what it's all about. That was plain, blind jealousy.
Yeah. And you went into it with your eyes closed.
Yes.
Not knowing what you were getting yourself into.
Yeah, but then I worked with it. I said, to be a doctor, I think science is important. Whereas my uncle was not doing science, I want to do science. So I did science. I would slog for it. And I was happy that I was taken out from the village and I settled up in Malay College, Kuala Kangsar, to do. And that's when I began to know what medicine was all about.
Right.
That interested me. That interested me for that.
Okay. Dr. Hazrianti, how much were you influenced by your father? I mean, as he was telling us the story, I mean, you obviously knew exactly what these stories were. I mean, obviously he's spoken to you about it. And is that what influenced you to do medicine as well?
Definitely, yes. So he is my role model. He is my person I looked up to ever since I was small. And there's only me and my younger brother, so we're not a very big family. Having said that, however, I remembered Abba was telling me a story that at one time of the year, maybe during my mid-high school years, that I said, no, I will never become a doctor because, I'm tired of seeing my father went on from one meeting to another meeting to another meeting. So I said, no medicine for me.
However, bad role model. meetings.
Meetings. But then I think the course changes throughout the years, and I think that having the chance and opportunity to follow my dad around, especially during diabetes camps, remember, Abba? You had lots of these diabetes camps he was organizing for his diabetic patient. During that days, the adults and the children were actually combined into one camp, and there were only one pediatric endocrinologist, Abba. So that was my teacher, my Arwah professor, Fatima Harun. So she passed away. And during that time, I just joined them, and I enjoyed the camp. I enjoyed getting to know children with type 1 diabetes. And I guess, ironically, 30 years down the line, now I am the one who's organizing this annual diabetes camp for my patients.
Yes, because you're now a pediatric endocrinologist.
Yes,
but
right.
What are your, when you graduated from University of Malaya as well, and so did Dr. Anwar, tell me about your years in University of Malaya, studying medicine.
Well, I initially wanted to go overseas, to India. In fact, got a place in Bombay. But my grandfather said, no. But I had to follow my grandfather. So I came to University of Malaya and was fun. University of Malaya at that time was really fun because we were able to talk, we were able to communicate, that community was complete. You know, there was a lot of interaction, there was a lot of dialogue, debates, and every weekend was an interesting weekend. You know, and the speaker's corner were bustling with activities. But I think at that time, we were a new nation, about 10 years old nation. I'm sure poverty was an issue. a lot of a part of the country. And I think as student leaders, you know, they were budding student leaders, they want to fight for the poverty issues. And as I think there was also nationalism. Bahasa Malaysia, Bahasa Melayu, Bahasa Kebangsaan at that time. And also the issue of the Islam issue. You know? And the powers that be in the university then were the student union, PMUM, we call it, very powerful student union. They were able to talk all sorts of things. And there was also a powerful the Islamic student union. So they were two very dominant, and we all enjoyed their discourse. You know? And I think it was a very good environment to learn, because we were, as I said, new university, new community, academic community, and everybody wanted to come to university, opened up opportunity for everybody to come to the university and get knowledge and also be able to later on improve their livelihood.
So you were in University of Malaya in the late 1960s, early 70s?
Yes, and at the time when Anwar Ibrahim was one of the, we were contemporaries in college, Malay College, we were contemporaries. We were the same year. And he was one of those fiery figures in the university. A lot of people want to identify with him then. And there are others as well. But one thing I must tell you, we were really Malaysia. Chinese, Indian, Malays were really, there was a real good Merdeka environment then, you know. But I don't see it later on. Based on there's too much polarization. I'll talk about it afterwards.
Yes, we'll come back. But Dr. Azrianti, can you relate to what Dr. Anwar is talking about? Because you were in University of Malaya when?
Yeah. So I had my pre-university years in 1997, 1998. And I moved on to the Faculty of Medicine somewhere 1998, 1999, somewhere like that. And I graduated in 2002. So, well, I guess in terms of trade, I mean, looking at, like, I think Abah had those years where medical college and the other colleges are all united and, you know, they sat and talked to each other. Now we are a little bit more sort of like we have separate entities, separate plans and issues and learning curves. So definitely we don't really have much encounter with the other colleges, but we do have some sports event, we do have some other events. But in terms of training, I think for medical training, there's not much difference. The basic is still the same.
So let's talk about nationalism. Yeah. Let's talk about student activism. Okay. I mean, did that even exist? You feel it at all?
We are probably not as active in terms of talking, you know, in public during our time. I think because the law of university has put in that we are not allowed to talk about politics. So the student speakers' corners are technically inhibited. You're not allowed.
I love your smile, Dr.
Exactly.
I love it. I wish everyone could see you right now.
Yeah.
You know, so you were vice chancellor from the year 2000, but you were the dean of the Faculty of Medicine for 10 years before you became the vice chancellor. And you came in as vice chancellor at a time when individual academic freedom, institutional freedom was really thrown into question. Yes. How did you manage that, given that you walked into University of Malaya at an era when these things were thriving?
Yes. I think, first of all, I would like to state very clearly that I didn't want the job. Several times that was given to me, I know you take the job. I said, no, I've got the university faculty medicine handful to manage with the hospital. I was also director of the hospital. That's my livelihood. I think, why you want me to manage the university? So, but then one day it was entrusted to me, and the current prime minister was responsible for it. And he said, you take over the university. So I took and I talked to him. I talked to him. I said, at that time he was Datuk Sri. I said, Datuk Sri, you asked me to manage this university. I'll take it. But I have some conditions. The conditions were, number one, I see my graduates. I've spoken to the graduates. They have difficulty in getting employment outside the government sector. Why? Because they cannot speak English. Their proficiency in English is poor. So I said, I want you to give me permission to improve the proficiency in English. Bahasa is no issue. They are fantastic with Bahasa Melayu, Bahasa Malaysia, but not English. I want to get the university to help me, help the students. That's number one. Number two, I said, there's a lot of polarization in the university, ethnic polarization. I think we need to get this better, and then you need to allow me to allow the students to open up and talk and debate among each other. Open the speaker's corner. He said, okay, both you can get and do it as you like. Okay, I did it. I went back to the university. I said, now look, we have problem with the language, English language, number one. Number two, we have problem with our students' discourse. They're not talking to across. They're talking to within. They're inclusive, ethnically inclusive, not exclusive, and they're not talking to each other. We have to change this. We must be one ahead of the government, one step ahead of the government. We must do it now. And I was opposed. Obviously, the language issue was opposed very, very hard by certain sectors of the academic community. They was angry with me. They said, you are anti-national. There's no rule saying that you can do this. I said, we don't have to, I said. We are a university. We invent. We recreate. We get new ideas. And we must be one step ahead of the government. And this is what I hope we can do. No, they all disagree with me. 3 months later, Tun Mahathir declared that English to be used in mathematics and science. Then I told the university back, I said, look, if we set ourselves then, we want to step ahead of the prime minister. But where we are now, we're part of the road, I said. We would have done that. Anyway, the other one was the speaker's corner. So I told the student union, I talked to them, what do you want? You want speaker's corner? Create in every college. They were surprised. Prof, you cannot get that. The government will ban you. No, no, no. I've got assurance that they will not interfere. But I want you to go to the speaker's corner and debate. Not issues about politics outside, but politics within our campus. Yeah? Talk about our campus. You can criticize me on the speaker's corner. Tell me what I'm wrong in the curriculum, something like that. No, go and talk. I want you to debate among yourselves. You know what? 6 months later, what happened? Nobody dared to be standing up in the center to speak.
So you're not.
Why? Because they cannot communicate. They cannot verbalize. They cannot debate.
They weren't thought to think.
No. They weren't thought to think. So there, I was so sad. And I said, this is terrible. This university becoming like a secondary school. This is bad, I said. But nonetheless, I was logged on. My priority was to get the academician to be solidly together to improve the academic quality, improve research, and get together, you know. Forget about what is happening outside. Forget about the politics outside. We have our own job to do. And I think I managed to reorientate the research agenda. I managed to reorientate the discourse between academics. And I managed to do that, I think. And I managed to inculcate the quality measures. In other words, we put in SOPs to assess our academic program, to assess our examinations, technique, or assess our delivery system, lectures and everything. There must be SOPs. And I think the academic community then were very, very grateful that we went through that, you know. And I think today, I think they are still using that facets of improvement in the management of academic program.
We'll come back and find out. In our Merdeka series, we're talking to father and daughter team, both endocrinologists, Dr. Anwar Zaini, former Vice Chancellor of University of Malaya, and Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini, a consultant pediatric endocrinologist from UMMC. Now, interesting times, though, because in 2000, when you took over as Vice Chancellor, Dr. Azrianti was a student in University of Malaya at that time. How did she manage this? Father Vice Chancellor has got different thoughts altogether. Something else happening on the ground amongst the students. How did you straddle both? Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Merdeka Day tomorrow. Dr. Anwar Zaini, a consultant endocrinologist and former Vice Chancellor of University of Malaya, and Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini, a consultant pediatric endocrinologist from University of Malaya Medical Center, joining me in our Merdeka special as father and daughter team to talk about medicine, science, our universities, and everything else to do with it. So you spent 3 years as a vice chancellor, year 2000 to 2003. And Dr. Azrianti, that's the time you were probably graduating, going to graduate when Dad was still the vice chancellor. And he was a very forward-thinking man. You, on the other hand, were on the ground with students who were probably not on the same page. How did you feel at that time?
Right. I remembered entering medical school years in 1997, 98. And at that point in time, I know my dad was the dean of the school. There was some resistance. Clearly, there were some issues at the back, you know, people talking behind my back. But I set my, you know, foot on the ground and I said that I requested, I work hard for Faculty of Medicine because of my own passion and desire. And I know that my dad, right from the very beginning, upon day one of admission to medical school, he has nothing at all to do with me, and he does not declare me as, you know,
the daughter.
Yes, I'm just one of the students.
Okay.
And I remembered him telling me every time, you know, when I sit in for exams, the board of directors will be around, he will leave the meeting room when my name has been mentioned or discussed during that time. So he technically was very professional and making sure that there's no sort of like, what do you call that, Daddy? Abba? No favoritism, ensuring that there's no favoritism, although people at the back might see differently, but I guess I just proceed and moved on. Be humble as much as possible, like Abba was saying, and enjoyed my medical school years. And Abah was very down to earth as well. I remember having some of my friends meeting him at the grounds and just, you know, talking to them as if like, you're just like, you know, one of my friends. And they said that never, you know, before this, a vice chancellor who sits like on the throne of the university. And now here he is being so humble with all the other students and making the gap between academician and students a bit closer and more approachable.
How did you manage the so-called polarization, the lack of the command of the English language? Obviously, you overcame that. I mean, you had a very different upbringing and exposure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you?
Well, I think in our medical school program and curriculum, English is still the main language that we use, except for during first year. Was it anatomy? No, it was not anatomy. Physiology. And I think biochemistry was initially conducted in Malay. So we had some difficulty in trying to, changing the understanding from Malay to English, English to Malay. But then subsequently, the curriculum changes and everything was doing it in English. I do see some of my friends struggling in the first a few years of their medical school years. But I guess working together, having tutorials, support group from the teachers actually helped us a lot. And then as soon as we do clinical years, having both, proficiency both in English and Malay helps us in terms of managing or clerking our patients, really.
Yeah. Dr. Anwar,
In fact, I just want to add that in the university then, you must get permission, official permission from the Yang Dipertuan Agong to conduct a program other than Bahasa Melayu, Bahasa Malaysia. And every year, without shy or shame, I ask the academic board, the highest academic board in the university was Senate, and that's where all the professors sitting and then the vice chancellor chairing. And we have to officially say that medicine, we have to conduct in English. Year one, year two, maybe mix, but year three upwards, in the clinical years, totally in English. And I said, we have to do this because medicine is an international discipline. And I want my graduates to be able to go all over the world to get additional knowledge. And without capability and proficiency in English, they would be lost. So, that was my impression. And I every year I had to beg, I had to ask, I had to plead. And there was some opposition, but I got my way anyway.
But you were VC.
Before VC, when
yes,
I was a dean.
Correct. But it must have been very frustrating as vice-chancellor to have to fight this cause for everyone, not just for medicine. You were there for 3 years. What would you say was some of your achievements? Or did you leave feeling like, it was a job that I did not finish or were not able to finish?
Well, think, you know, the university community, the academic, you know, this is what I must tell you, that the so-called academic community, there's a mixture of academician in political cloak and also politicians in academic cloak. You understand what I mean?
Yes.
And their intentions are different. Their attention, not to me, I don't think their intention are purely academic excellence. Anyway, we are kind of happy with the country is free. So I had to grapple with this issue, and then English is one of the important issues that I had to grapple with. You know, certain faculties, maybe English not so important, but other faculties, the technical faculties, you know, where medicine, engineering, dentistry, accountancy, and all these things, they need exposure. They need to vocalize. They need to be able to communicate easily in English or in other languages, for that matter. Yeah, if there were ability to use French, teach French, and I might as well do French as well, German, Mandarin, for that matter. But we were not that have that freedom to do that. Languages were taught as a subject. This is the issue. I think language now, from now onwards, I think should be taught as a livelihood. So young children should be exposed to all type of languages. They should be able to communicate and talk about languages and not be treated as a subject of a school. Now you learn English as a subject. It's different from talking English and other languages. You know? So I think this is what the problem was. Mm-hmm. And when we have so limited spheres of communication, language-wise, our mind also very limited. We will be tunnel-viewed. We will have probably like the blinkered horses. You know? And we want to remove the blinkers.
Did you feel you were fighting a losing battle?
At a certain stage, I was, but I couldn't care less about it. I said, I told everybody, I have got 3 years. I know I've got 3 years only. And I want to do certain things in 3 years.
What did you achieve?
Well, as I said earlier, I achieved in getting the solidarity among the academic staff, a lot of academic staff. They were appreciative of the why we need to be so mindful of an academic excellence, research reorientation, and also making sure that what we do has a properly organized, structured, and easily assessed. No? So that we can find, at the end of the day, we can assess our capability, we can know where our quality is, and measure our quality with ease. So I think we were one of the first universities to have got the ISO. University Hospital had also had ISO accreditation by CIRM.
Let's talk about University of Malaya Medical Centre. I mean, that's where Dr. Azrianti, you're attached to as well. Yeah. And, you know, you were there as well, Dr. Anwar. How do you think UMMC has fared over the years, Dr. Azrianti, since you've become a doctor?
I think there's a massive sort of like changes from the, you know, the initial building. Number one, I think in terms of building itself, it has, as you can see now, the hospital itself has actually blossomed and sort of to say like a mushroom. Mm. We have a lot more buildings coming up, and I suppose the demand is there. So the capacity of patients coming in are also technically increasing over the years. But I don't think it's just that. I think it's mainly the professionalism, the people who works in UMMC, the training that the UMMC provides for future doctors. Research plays a very important part in UMMC, where it helps to consolidate the training down there among doctors, both for the medical school years, meaning undergraduate as well as postgraduate curriculum. I think it has blossomed over the year, and throughout the years, I think Abah was managing UMMC for a very long time, and we had a few stories back there where you had some trouble. Anyway, I know it's difficult for you. You had some issues about getting money, getting funds to help build up UMMC, but I think he pulled it through. The idea of putting the emergency department right down.
I think we were 800 beds. But we had 1,500 patients on leave. So I call that phantom hospital.
Why? Why were they on leave?
Because they had no beds. because they are still under our care.
Right.
We couldn't manage to keep them in. Mm. We give them medication, go home first, come back, go home, come back. And these are the on-leave patients.
Right.
I call that
okay.
phantom hospital.
Yeah.
I said, this must stop. I said, this is not, must stop. But we got, we meet some renovation. We got some additional building. We get, I think we had, when I left, about 1,200 beds.
Yes.
And but I think we, the building was also old by then. The pediatrics, yeah. You know, the concept of pediatrics small. So the ward was small. So I said, come on, man. You have to change this. The pediatrics, even the child is small, but the problem is as big as the adult, maybe bigger than the adult.
Yes.
We need space for them, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to fight for to get, until I retired, I think I didn't get the allocation. The building was not done until well after I retired.
Exactly. Yes. I think it was about 10 years down the line. Then only now the current building that I'm having is actually...
Has come up.
And running as it
and,
is.
And UMMC is one of the leading teaching hospitals in the country. So something to be proud of. But then after that, you went on to become one of the founders of University Malaya Specialist Centre. We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. In our Merdeka series today on Health and Living, Dr. Anwar Zaini, a consultant endocrinologist and former vice-chancellor of University of Malaya, Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini, consultant pediatric endocrinologist from University Malaya Medical Center, both joining me to talk about two generations of doctors and how we have evolved over time. Dr. Anwar, you went on from UMMC, you went to become the Dean of the Faculty of Medicine, you became the Vice-Chancellor from 2000 to 2003. But in that time, you also started up University Malaya Specialist Centre, which you were one of the you were one of the other individuals. The other was Professor Datuk Dr. Muhammad Amin Jalaluddin, who was instrumental in 1998 to set up UMSC.
When I was dean, and I found that a lot of my academics, good academics, they were having all the best of trainings in the hospital, and by the time they matured, they went out to private practice because we couldn't give them what they wanted.
The salaries.
Salaries and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And this go on and on. We lost a lot of talents. So I said to myself that we need to stop this. And I went to venture to my colleague, my own contemporary, Professor Richard Larkins. Professor Larkin was, at that point of time, Dean of the Medical Faculty of Melbourne Uni. And he is also an endocrinologist. So I went to see the private wing of the in Melbourne University. And I look at that and I said, this is a good model. But I changed it a bit to suit our own environment. And I came back and I put in a paper. I presented to the then Minister of Education, the late Tan Sri...
Sulaiman
Daud. Tan Sri was very kind. He was, Tan Sri Sulaiman Daud was a dentist to start with. And he, Anwar, this is a good idea. Why don't you present to all the vice chancellors? I was a mere minion, sort of a medical dean. So I said, presented the medical to the vice chancellor's council with the minister in chairing. So when I presented, one or two vice chancellors objected. He said, you can, because you are in Kuala Lumpur. Obviously, private patient can come. My university hospital up there in Northeast, no private patient, all everybody is poor. They can not afford to start a private. But I told minister then, look, if the university in Northeast, they have the entire south of Thailand, entire Northeast states.
Medical tourism.
Medical tourism. Mm-hmm. For them, no competition. There were no private hospital then in the Northeast. We had thousands of them in the Klang Valley. And we had to compete with all this. So what comparison are you talking about?
Yep.
He says it. Then Datuk Sulaiman, when he was Datuk then, he said, no, this is a good idea. I'm going to present this to the cabinet. I also presented this actually to Mahathir then when he was Prime Minister and Anwar Ibrahim was the Finance Minister to justify the cost of it. And they said, go ahead, it's a good idea. So we started it. For the objective is to retain our staff and to retain the talents within the university. Mm. It did that, you know. But unfortunately, we had to use the premises of the university hospital. We couldn't have otherwise, you know, particularly for the ward inpatient care, because we need to have backing. You know? Then we develop the outpatient outside the hospital, just entrance into the main campus. But I think looking at it at the moment, that was a good idea, and I think a lot of staff was happy to stay on. But I think they need to go to another stage because they cannot be using the facilities of the current UM hospital, you know, the public sector hospital, to put their patients inside that because you are limiting the space. You must create your own. I remember that I presented to the university council then a project to demolish the old houses, you know, bungalows in front of the Jalan University, and then create a multi-story building for living quarters for the staff, as well a small hospital, additional hospital, maybe 200-bed hospital for the private wing. We have space for that. But somehow or other, I didn't get that to the permission to do that. And I think today they still have not done it. But I think they should do this, then in the next stage. And the next stage also, I think the consultants of the hospital and also the academic staff, the professors, should go into another paradigm. You don't become fully academic at the same time and to do private practice. No? You will cause a lot of dissatisfaction among some of the staff who have not got an opportunity to do private practice. So if you want to do private practice, do what we, I'm in Monash at the moment. I am a fractional. I want 50% of my time to do private practice and 50% of my time teaching. So the university just pays the 50% salary. Yep. The rest, you do private practice. But you must practice in this place and we provide you all the facilities. So I think this is how we should the University of Malaysia should go to the next stage of development. And then I think the centre will thrive. This is what happened in Australia and many other parts of the world where like Mayo Clinic, for example, the hospital became a foundation or a trust fund to develop it. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for the UMSC. They should be self-funding. They should have get into another dimension of management. But the university staff can have full advantage of the facilities and at the same time do not tax the university too much otherwise. You know? So I think the symbiotic establishment of the UMSC and the University Medical Center and the university should be preserved.
Do you think that's happening, Dr. Azrianti? Do you see this ecosystem evolving and working closely with each other?
I think at the moment the issue was funding. So that's why I think ABBA was trying to say we cannot move on to the next level because of the funds was not nicely allocated to help to build up UMSC. But I think the symbiosis is there. They're making it better. And I know that we've just had a recent fund to help to build up UMSC, a new hospital. So we are looking at 3 years, 5 years down the line where we can have our own system. At the same time, supporting UMMC as well as UM, becoming at least one of the financial feeder, you know, a small fractionate at the same time, complementing the UMMC system. Yeah.
So UMSC now does help fund UMMC as well as UM, am I correct?
Yes, there's a fractional of the
So in terms of funding, you're getting your funding from the Ministry of Education as opposed to the Ministry of Health, am I correct?
Yes.
Is that a good idea?
Well, I think If you are in my place, you probably want the same thing, you know. Exclusiveness to Ministry of Education is an important component because I think you know well the public sector healthcare, Ministry of Health, they are working on a shoestring budget, which I'm very sad about. We should use at least 7 to 8% of our GDP on healthcare. We should not at the moment.
Yeah. It's so that's a problem. 4 point something.
Yeah, 4 point something. I can see here really that if you go from one hospital to another, you can see some differences between the various hospital, public hospital. Obviously, university hospital different. Now, I think the issue here, issue about university hospital attached to the Ministry of Education for the purpose of teaching purposes. You need to have special allocation for the education. I'm in my calculation when I was doing university hospital then, at least 30% of the cost of running the hospital was dedicated to teaching. Now, they need to provide teaching space. They need to provide teaching facilities in the hospital. Now, is that true in the Ministry of Health? No. My heart bleeds for them because they want to teach their own staff in Ministry of Health. They want to train them. They want to graduate them in various specialty. But do they have that fund, you know? Whereas in University Hospital was special in that sense. We were getting funds for teaching, and this is what how they survive. So the University Hospital in Pokok Kebangsaan, University of Science are the same. So we have that special allocation, which is important. Very, very important. I was hoping, in fact, I proposed it through the Medical Council at one stage, that the Ministry of Health Hospital should be gazetted or should be designated as teaching hospitals as well. Do not discriminate them from the university hospital. Although they are not university, but they are teaching hospital. They should be given special allocation for teaching. Because some of them are very good. They got good consultants. They have got good facilities. And they should survive.
What's stopping this process from happening?
Public sector management. A different management, you know.
So,
service. Even though we have talked about it till kingdom comes, that nothing has been done.
You know, you're speaking about the healthcare expenditure versus GDP. We're at 4 point something. Some people argue that we don't need to increase this too much because if we address leakages and wastage and all of that, we will actually have enough money.
I don't want to go through that lane, but you are saying it. I'm seeing it in front of my eyes when I was Vice-Chancellor. I'm seeing when I was dealing things with the ministries. But to put that aside, I think we need, as time goes by, technology is coming in. We need to be abreast with technology. Technology is costly. And I think 7-8% is not a big deal as far as any country is concerned with regards to healthcare. But I think we need to improve certain aspects of the healthcare.
Yeah, exactly.
You are right in saying that if we reduce pilferages, wastages, I think, yeah, right. But what our problem at the moment is dichotomy, that there's a dichotomy of care. There's a public sector care, there's a private sector care. You can see the difference. The private sector care, money is the number one. The stakeholder says money is number one.
Motivation.
And the use, hopefully most of it, the profit that they get into betterment of this of the facilities and the care, hopefully quality of care as well. But the public sector, everything they have to do. They have to do training, they have to do service, they want to be the policing, they regulate everything, you know, in one potpourri. But as I said, we should begin to classify some of these hospital, major hospital, as proper training, teaching hospital. Make them teaching hospital and give them that recognition and funding for it, so that we will have many more universities hospital around the country. You know, they can do research properly and so on. So I think this is where we are not doing it at the moment.
We have reached 61 years of independence, and we'll soon celebrate 55 years as a country. Dr. Azrianti, what do you think our country's healthcare system should achieve going forward?
I think we are moving towards infectious disease-free, especially in terms of when talk about pediatric point of view. I think there's a lot of, despite the advancement, despite the knowledge, despite the facilities as well as availability of healthcare system as compared 60 years down the line, we are still at some points we are actually progressing. However, there are some points that are actually pulling us a little bit towards the back as compared to other developing countries. Like, for example, if I want to mention a little bit about vaccination. I mean, we do know vaccination is very important in children, but there are some clusters of ideologies that thinking that vaccination is not important, hence pulling that health system care slightly towards the disadvantagement. But otherwise, I believe that the healthcare system in Malaysia is progressing way improvement, there's diversity, there's new, we are going towards subspecialization. So instead of just having a general doctor, now we are doing more subspecialization. Like, for example, from pediatrics, you can do pediatric endocrinology, pediatric cardiology, pediatric nephrology to help cater the demand of the diseases around this era of this millennium.
Dr. Anwar, your take on the healthcare system going forward?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, I think we need to improve our quality of care. And at the moment, people talk about quality of care, but at the moment, we do not have the measure of quality of care. You know, Malaysia is renowned for its ability to reduce infant mortality, maternal mortality, and so on, right from very high down to almost 1% or 2%.
Yeah, we've done very well in that area.
But I think the disease coming up after this are actually more complicated diseases, non-communicable diseases, and we need to go to a different paradigm. I think healthcare, although we have been brought into our specialization and so on, then we need to have technology. We need soon. I think artificial intelligence is coming into the foray. You know, yes, but don't forget, public health is very important. I think although we want to move ahead with technology, we begin to forget that the inclusiveness of the community. Every members of the community in healthcare has to come in. We are not that. We think Minister of Health is the one responsible for healthcare, which is to me wrong. You know, we should begin to educate every members of the community, be it in the private sector, be it industry, be it anywhere, that health is everybody's responsibility. I'll give you an example: diabetes itself. You need to start not at the clinic. We need to start at home. We need to start in the community. You know, the great countries now, like Finland, for example, they go to the community. It's communities empowered to run, to moderate and modulate the public health issues.
Prevention is better.
Very important. And I hope that there will be a lot more champions in this area later on to go there. I think to look at the complex diseases of heart disease and so on, I think technology will come by, but they come with a cost. Now, how do we want to cater for this cost? By doing what we are doing at the moment, you run the country down, you know. Sooner or later, be a ship will be aground, so to say, you know. But we cannot survive like this. There must be a system of healthcare financing throughout the country, and similar to everybody. Everybody should be same. And everybody should be funding it. That's why I said, you know, the community should get empowerment. And how it's going to be, I think the Ministry of Health have been knocking their heads about for the past, how many, three decades, about how to finance the healthcare. And they have not come to a... I'm hoping the new government, the more liberated government, should have a clear view of what to do. And this is very important now. We need to be more realistic in our health financing issues. I don't think our community can survive out of pocket all the time. And if you talk about health insurance, we cannot have millions of health insurance programs all about, you know. So I think I would plead to the policymakers now, take great pains in looking at our health in the future. And health is wealth. And it cannot be further emphasized, you know? So education, health, and wealth come together.
Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with me. That's Dr. Anwar Zaini, consultant endocrinologist and former vice-chancellor of University of Malaya, together with his daughter, Dr. Azrianti Anwar Zaini, a consultant pediatric endocrinologist from University Malaya Medical Center, in our Merdeka special, Two Generations of Doctors on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.